What if the biggest threat to the trillion-dollar satellite industry wasn't a rival nation, but millions of pieces of metal moving at 17,000 miles per hour? And what if the solution to cleaning up that threat created an entirely new multi-billion-dollar market? For Western companies, the question is how to build the supply chain for it. Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly strategic briefing on the technology that matters. I'm Susie.
And I'm Troy.
This week, we're moving beyond the launch rockets and looking at the critical infrastructure of the growing off-world economy. We're asking, who's cleaning up space, who's going to power the permanent bases on the moon, and who's building the hardened components that can actually survive there? The answers point to massive new opportunities for U.S. and European industry, and we're going to break them down right now. Troy, let's start with orbital housekeeping. We often talk about launching satellites, but this week Japan is making headlines for cleaning up after them. What's happening with the company Astroscale and the Japanese space agency, JAXA?
They're establishing a clear global lead in what's called on-orbit servicing and active debris removal, or ADR. Astroscale, a Japanese startup with stock code 186A, is at the forefront. Their ADR-ASJ satellite just successfully tracked a defunct H-2A rocket stage, proving out their core technology.
Tracking space junk is one thing, but is there a real business here?
There is. Astroscale has already secured a contract with the U.S. Space Force to launch an orbital satellite refueler in 2026. This is a crucial pivot. The market isn't just about being space janitors. It's about refueling, repairing, and extending the life of billion-dollar satellite assets. Analysts are projecting Astroscale could be profitable by 2029.
So this is the picks and shovels play for the space economy. How does this specifically affect U.S. and European manufacturers?
It opens an entirely new supply chain. These service vehicles require advanced robotics, autonomous navigation systems, sophisticated sensors, and capture mechanisms. This is a prime opportunity for European manufacturers, particularly in Germany and France, with their deep expertise in industrial automation and robotics to become key suppliers.
And what should Western trading companies be watching?
They need to see on-orbit servicing as an emerging infrastructure sector. Sourcing partnerships with companies like Astroscale will be critical. But it's also a warning. Another Japanese startup, Spacewalker, which was developing a reusable winged rocket, just entered bankruptcy in February 2026.
So what's the actionable insight?
The insight is twofold. First, evaluate the on-orbit servicing market not as a future concept, but as an immediate industrial need. For manufacturers, it's about identifying niche component requirements now. Second, for traders and investors, it's about distinguishing between the high-risk, capital-intensive hardware ventures like new rockets and the more sustainable, recurring revenue service models like debris removal and satellite life extension.
Okay, so once orbit is a bit cleaner, you need power. And this week, it seems NASA and the U.S. Department of Energy are going all in on nuclear power for the moon. What's the big announcement?
They are jointly advancing fission surface power systems with a goal of having a demonstration on the lunar surface by the late 2020s. We're talking about a small nuclear reactor capable of providing up to 40 kilowatts of continuous electricity.
40 kilowatts might not sound like much, but on the moon, I imagine that's a game changer. Why is this so important?
Because it solves the biggest problem for a permanent lunar base, the 14-day lunar night. At the moon's south pole, where missions are targeting water ice, solar power is ineffective for two straight weeks of extreme cold. A fission reactor provides reliable, continuous power, which is the absolute backbone for life support, ISRU operations, and any real industrial activity.
ISRU, that's in situ resource utilization, or living off the land.
Exactly. Extracting water and making rocket fuel. This move is happening in parallel with NASA's Acceleration of Nuclear Thermal Propulsion, or NTP, which aims to cut the Mars transit time from over 6 months to just 3 or 4. The SR-1 Freedom demonstration mission for that is now targeting a late 2028 launch.
So what does this strategic shift to nuclear mean for U.S. and European manufacturers?
It's a massive long-term opportunity. This isn't just one reactor. It's the beginning of a lunar power grid. This requires highly specialized manufacturing for reactor components, power conversion systems, heat rejection systems, and advanced radiation shielding. Companies in the terrestrial nuclear industry, aerospace, and advanced materials have a clear first-mover advantage.
And for trading companies and distributors?
This signals the start of a high-value, decade-long supply chain. Distributors specializing in high-performance metals, radiation-hardened electronics, and specialized cooling systems should be engaging with prime contractors now. The demand will be sustained as lunar bases expand.
So, what's the actionable insight for executives listening?
Executives in relevant manufacturing and tech sectors should immediately map their existing capabilities against the roadmaps for NASA's Fission Surface Power and Nuclear Thermal Propulsion programs. It's time to start conversations with the major aerospace primes. This is a foundational technology for the entire off-world economy, and getting in early is critical.
Power is one thing, but all the electronics and sensors have to survive the extreme radiation of space. I saw two major breakthroughs this week in what are called rat heart components. Troy, what did Georgia Tech develop?
Researchers there have engineered a new ferroelectric NAND memory chip. It is 30 times more durable than conventional flash memory, and more importantly, can withstand a cumulative radiation dose of 1 million grays, or MGY. That's equivalent to 100 million X-ray exposures.
How does it work? Conventional memory gets corrupted by cosmic rays, right?
Correct. This chip uses a material property called ferroelectricity. The material retains a permanent electric polarization, which is extremely difficult for radiation to disrupt or flip. This essentially solves the problem of data corruption for AI processors and autonomous systems on long-duration missions.
So our data is finally safe in deep space. And I saw a UK company, Resolve Optics, is doing something similar for cameras?
Exactly. Resolve Optics just shipped its first batch of flight-ready, radiation-hardened lenses for small satellite cameras. They are also rated to withstand 1 megagray of radiation. They're made with premium cerium-doped glass, which prevents the lens from discoloring or solarizing under constant radiation bombardment, ensuring image quality is maintained.
This sounds like a direct opportunity for specialized manufacturers in both the U.S. and Europe.
It is. This is the new frontier for high-performance electronics and optics. It's a chance for European optics leaders and U.S. semiconductor firms to create a new premium product category. And the applications go beyond space. Think terrestrial nuclear energy, medical imaging, and high-altitude avionics. Resolve Optics was able to deliver quickly by adapting existing designs from the nuclear sector for aerospace use.
What's the message for trading companies and distributors here?
The market for rad-hardened components is moving from a niche, cost-prohibitive military sector to a broader commercial one. The demand from thousands of small satellites and new constellations will be significant. Distributors need to understand these new performance specs and start identifying these next-generation suppliers.
So the actionable insight for tech executives?
They should be investigating how these principles, ferroelectricity and memory, and advanced doped glass and optics, can be integrated into their own product lines. This isn't just about surviving space. It's about building a new standard of unparalleled reliability for any harsh environment application on Earth.
Troy, a lot of deep analysis this week. Let's boil it down. What are the three key strategic takeaways for our listeners?
First, the space services economy is real and investable. On-orbit services like debris removal and satellite refueling are moving from concept to commercial contracts led by companies like Astroscale. This creates an immediate new supply chain for robotics and autonomous systems.
Second,
nuclear power is now the designated energy source for off-world expansion. The U.S. commitment to fission reactors for the moon and nuclear propulsion for Mars is a clear long-term market signal. Manufacturers in the aerospace and energy sectors need to align with this roadmap now.
And finally,
component-level innovation is creating high-margin opportunities. The demand for radiation-hardened electronics and optics is exploding with the growth of satellite constellations and deep space missions. This is a chance for specialized U.S. and European manufacturers to dominate a critical, high-performance market.
And the bottom line for executives considering action?
The space economy is maturing into a multi-layered industrial ecosystem. The actionable insight is to look past the launch providers and identify your company's role in the three critical downstream markets: in-space services, off-world power infrastructure, and the hardened component supply chain.
That's all the time we have for this week's Troy Technical Intelligence. We're here to give you the strategic edge you need to compete and win in a rapidly changing technological landscape.
Thanks, Susie. The pace of change is accelerating, and staying informed is the first step to staying ahead.
Join us again next week for your essential briefing. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit us at troytechnical.com for more insights. Thanks for listening.